Hello, this is Daryl here, sending love as always. Thank you for tuning in. I just want to say, if you like this interview, you can check our website for companion workbooks, action guides, tools, checklists, templates, and show notes with links for everything mentioned on the call. Just visit bestbusinesscoach.ca. That's best, B-E-S-T, businesscoach.ca. Enjoy.
Come on, good to go.
Is being recorded.
All right. Hey, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by CEO of Kaizen Mindset Limited, Rich Johnson. Rich spent 17 years in the military, and now he's a leadership development consultant, which means he helps supercharge leaders to take the step back they deserve with zero stress by helping their teams work better with military precision. So I've asked Rich to join us here today because teamwork is such an important part of running any business. He's got the goods. So Rich, thank you so much for joining us today, my friend. How are you doing?
Hey, Daryl. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm good. We've been chatting for a bit. So Rich has been like my brother from another mother. And it was so funny. We both showed up to this interview. This is not planned or scheduled. This was totally... It's just funny. So
not matching shirts, but we've gone for the same color palette.
We got the palettes, Dad. The white wall, the palettes. We're on there. So
anyways. I painted this last night. I knew, I was up all night green. Doing this. Yeah. The wife's gonna kill me.
As you guys can tell, Rich has got a great personality and he is such a team player, and it is just an honor and a pleasure to be here with him on this. And Rich, before we get into some of this other stuff that we want to talk about, I want to get how did you even get started? Can we talk a bit about your journey and development of these leadership skills, and especially the team component, because it's such a strength for you, collaborating with others, bringing people together, helping everyone understand their role to play. And it's such an important skill. How did you even get into that? Were your family, were your parents running teams? Were they entrepreneurs? How did you get into the team kind of, leadership role to begin with?
It's kind of a weird journey for me because I was, when I was growing up, my dad was, he was like a shift manager at a parcel delivery firm. And my mum was, she worked a checkout. Big retail chain, but she was putting herself through accounting school. So they kind of had this weird schedule to look after me and my brother. And my dad would work super early in the morning. He'd be 4:20 leaving the house. And he'd be there to pick us up from school. And then mum would be there for us in the morning, but then we wouldn't see her, in the evening because she was putting herself through this long accountancy course. So I was kind of a shy kid, to be honest. I was, got a bit bullied in school. And then I kind of matured out of that, played rugby for a little bit. And then I broke my collarbone a few times and it was really weak. So, the rugby kind of stopped. And I decided one day that, I really want to join the army. That's what I wanted to do. I want to get out of the hometown and see the world. So I was this shy kid going into the careers office and thinking, what I'd want to do. And I took it so seriously that my dad took a day off work one day and went into the careers office to talk to the guy. And he kind of came back and said, look, I know you're going to do this, but he had the booklet with all the jobs in, and he just highlighted three of them. He said, these are the three that I'll support you doing because, you get something out of it. So it was kind of like a mechanic, an electrician, and I can't even remember what the third one was. I think it may have been like a policeman or something like that. And I thought, well, I'm no snitch, so the police is out. So I then went to, I was like, oh, okay, so I could do the electrician thing. So I started going to a college, applied for a college program to be an electrician. My maths wasn't that great, so I failed the maths exam. But they said, you can be a plumber. We just, you can't kill yourself with water. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll be a plumber. So was putting myself through this the course to be a plumber. So I was got a job as a plumber's mate, and then found out I had got into the army. So I was like, cool, you know, I've been and done the runs and things like that. And I remember I was so nervous after doing the run. And I got on the train, you know, I was 15 and 9 months or something like that. I think it was the youngest that you could be by like a day to go and do this, the physical testing. And so I was so nervous. And I got the train back with all these guys, you know, from like 18 to 25. You know, they're all like having beers. And, you know, is it like, do you want a beer? And I remember just, I'd never had like a beer before. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll have this beer. I had like half of that, and I just went, I was sick everywhere. You know, I just absolutely carried the thing. And I just stood up and went and sat in another carriage and just kind of like waited. You know, I was got in, you know, got out, payphone, like, hey, mum, can you come and pick me up? I've got sick everywhere. And it was like a real, like, am I sure I want to be doing this? And then I realized because I was, it was the thing I was most scared of. So I thought, well, it's definitely the thing that I have to do. So I went to it's like an adapted basic training. So for under 18s, you can go to a different basic training where you still do all the soldiering skills, but they top up your education as well. So it turns out that I didn't do too bad in school. So they offered me an engineering program. They said, you know, you can do like a more advanced maths. You can do engineering instead of English. So I ended up doing something like that. So yeah, it was, you know, going, like, you might be on like a machine gun range in the morning, and then you may be coming back and doing, you know, like an engineering project.
What? So like 15, 16 years old, and you're shooting machine guns and doing engineering, and your friends are still sitting in English class, hating their lives, watching the clock.
It's, you know, it was just a completely different experience. I came out of my shell more and more, just because of that environment. You know, I kind of realized then, this is all about the team, you know, and the team player, the people who aren't team players in the military do not survive, because you can always get something covered up. You know, somebody will always, your shirt's kind of on wrong. Let me sort that out for you. You know, I remember, we were kind of stood on parade waiting for an inspection by like the big cheese, and I sneezed. And I was kind of stood in like the middle rank. So there's people in front of me in a line, there's people behind me in a line, and I was kind of in the middle, and I sneezed. And I got jailed. The guy was like, you sneezed without permission. these two big burly guys came and like dragged me away. You know, it was like, lever. I was like, oh. So I got taken to the jail on camp. And this guy was just like, you know, handed me this big, I don't know if people even know, like the sort of millennials may not know what these are, but it's a big, heavy, like floor buffer. You probably used them in like martial arts. You know, so the manual, not the electric. The electric was too easy. So we got the manual one. Yeah. And this guy was like, you start buffing this, you know, I mean, this floor is like glass, you know, there's like, it's like a marble. And you know, so shiny. Probably 16 and a half at this point.
Yeah, okay. So you're terrified. You know, these guys are like men muscle and like man bodies, and you're like 16-year-old kid. And you sneeze, they're just raking you over the coals.
Yeah, and it was so stupid, because I was like, I kind of hit puberty early, and I needed to shave. I probably had this from like 15. And but there was a guy who had literally never shaved and you know, didn't need to. And one of the instructors came up and he was like, "Can you shave this morning?" This guy was like, "No, I don't need to." And he's like, "Everyone shaves." And he jailed this kid. You know, this kid gets carted off. He's probably got like one, you know, wispy hair on his chin or something like that. And this guy was like, you know, you're getting the high jump for this. So anyway, I was in this jailhouse. And I was buffing the floor, you know, just, oh my God, this buff is so heavy. And this guy comes up to me. He's like, "That's not how you do it. Give me the buff." I was like, "Cool." He said, "That's how you do it. You get on that." And I was like, "Oh, yeah." I was sweating. Yeah. I was panicking because I thought, "I don't know how long I'm in this jail for." And then I see the guy come in. You know, he was marching double time. He was marched into James. Like, "You take over the buffer." And it was the guy who was standing in front of me. And it turns out that when I'd sneezed, a little bit of it had gone on this guy's shirt. And he'd been jailed because I'd sneezed. Yeah, so I was not Mr. Popular with that guy. It was like, oh, you know, you really... we got like an expression. It's like Jack. And it's like Jack the Lad. You know, you're kind of out doing things by yourself. And, you know, you're out for yourself. And yeah, Jack the Lad. I think it's like an old, like 1960s sort of cartoon character. This guy is just kind of out for himself. It is literally the worst thing that you can be called in all seriousness in the military. Like in the British military, the worst thing you'd be called is like, "Oh, he's Jack," because it's, you know, it is literally like he's selfish, he's self-centered, he's a bit of a jerk, he's out for himself. There's a tradition it's called Jack Brew. So you make like a cup of tea or coffee, you just make it for yourself. You don't say, does anyone want a tea, coffee? So like, if you get your like coffee out, it's for everyone, it's not just for you. If you make a Jack Brew and someone says, "Oh, hey, can I have a sip of your brew?" And you go, yeah, you can have it. You could take a sip and then just throw the rest away. And that was disgusting. It's the Jack Brew. So that is like the team spirit is kind of beaten into you, I guess.
Yeah. That's like Hell Week. And from anybody that's listening to this from Canada or the US knows about Hell Week for the Navy SEALs. And it's like that in the sense of, one, they just beat you down physically and mentally. But then it's almost like you said, if you're not a team player, you won't survive is what I've heard. Like, you really have to rely on each other. So what were some of the biggest challenges? I mean, obviously, you know, sounds like you're getting, you know, like that initiation, you know, like you're getting beat down, put in your place, so to speak, where now they tear you down. So now you have to be built up through accomplishment or through.
Yeah, it's a really gradual process. And there's probably, I don't think there's like science behind it as such, but I think if you looked at it in like a psychological way, there'd probably be a lot of evidence base in there, you know, for doing stuff. So, I mean, like the first term where I was in, you know, where I was put in jail for sneezing, something like that, that is, you know, that's the hardest point. And it's essentially all stick. There's not a lot of carrot in there where you're getting like praise for doing something well. And then you kind of move into the second term and you get more. It's like, hey, you know, guys, this is really good. And then, you know, you actually get praised for the stuff that you do well, and you still get, you know, beat on for the stuff that you're not doing so good at. And then the third term is the hardest term. And, you know, I mean, by no means I'm saying this is, you know, like it's not Hell Week. I'm not trying to compare it to that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the third term is, you wouldn't be able to do it straight out of the gate. You know, you don't have the skill set, you don't have the physical capacity, because that's been built up, you know, in the unit PT and things like that. But then it's also the easiest because you're not getting, you know, there's no like pointless stuff in there. It's like, hey, this is your next time in. You're outside, you know, the PT hall at 0800, which actually means 0750, because, you know, you're 5 minutes before, 5 minutes before. So you're always 10 minutes early for every single time, you know, and you know, right place, right time, right equipment, right attitude. And you just, you're just kind of there, and there's nothing they can, you know, there's some little stuff that they'll throw in there. So they'll go, "All right, you know, wait for one of the instructors, we'll march you down," and then they won't turn up. So you're stuck there between, well, they told us to wait here, but they also told us this timing. And you just got to make like a command decision and just kind of go, well, we're going to march ourselves down there. You know, we're going to salute officers on the way down. And then, you know, you turn up and the DS are there, you know, the directing staff are there going, good choice, guys. You know, you didn't just wait around, you actually made a decision. And that was kind of my experience of third term, that you can actually, and it, you know, it was shocking for me to find myself in third term saying, look, guys, we probably should just go to this, you know, timing and we'll, because there's an attitude of, we'll just take the hit, you know, if we end up getting punished for this, then we'll just take it because this is what we all thought was the right thing to do. And it was kind of shocked me to find myself being one of the people that was saying, well, yeah, let's just make a decision and do something. You know, whereas in first term and, you know, before that, I'd have been stood at the back going, well, I'll just do what everyone else does. Yeah, so I really come out of my shell in that sort of respect.
Yeah, no, I love that. And a lot of this for you, like, I mean, I did cadets and that sort of stuff as a kid, but I've never been in the military. And I know there's going to be military people listening to this, but there's also going to be pure civilians listening to this. And I think it's an interesting thing to think about when you talk about, like even just talking about those first three terms, it's like they really try to purge the weak people and develop a culture of grit and determination, it sounds like, because you say like the first term, it's all stick, no carrot. And I mean, this is a movie, movies aren't real life, but I know that in Fight Club, I don't know why I thought of that, like that they have the guy show up to the house and they have to stand outside for 2 days and all they do is get berated in the beginning, you know, like, you suck, you're too tall, you're too fat, if they're blonde, they're too blonde, if they're like, whatever they are, it's not good enough.
Yeah.
It's to get rid of those that weakness, that people. And that's like, I see that. I've trained with a lot of like Olympic athletes and high, like world-class champions. And there's that mentality to like preserving the inner core and having to almost earn that rite of passage. And then it's like, once then you start getting acknowledged for what you're good at, and then you kind of feel like you've earned your place there. And then it sounds like the third term, you said right place, right time, right attitude. And you also kind of like groupthink, because one of the things that I think is so empowering that you bring to the business world is this whole like kind of chain of command, enabling people to be trained, able, and prepared to step in if the leadership is removed, like all that sort of stuff. And that's where this, after 17 years, it's almost like second nature for you, and just breaking that down and understanding. I mean, I know a lot of people say it can be a struggle going from military life to civilian life because other people don't have that discipline. Like, all candidness to have people here, I was late for our call, not because I was late, I was at my computer, but I got caught up with something. And like you said, when you're talking about, you're always 5-10 minutes early for everything, like that's just such a good discipline to have. And now you're in the civilian world where, like, you know, you got people just, you know, not as dialed in like that. And that's a big adjustment. So can you speak to a little bit more of maybe some of the challenges that you felt in collaborating with a team, in leading a team, in organ, like, you know, again, we're still at the kind of the early stage of your career. Were there phases and levels that you had to go through?
Yes. I mean, I think one of the things in the military that people almost see but don't want to bring across is that level hierarchy. You know, it's not a flat hierarchy. There's distinct levels that, you know, you can, and you, everyone wears the pension plan on the chest, you know, so you can see like, oh, you know, that guy's a, you know, he's a corporal, he's a sergeant, he's a staff sergeant, this guy's a warrant officer, you know, captain, major, you know, and there's a distinct strata there. I think that's one of the things that's the hardest to adjust to, because you might have guys who are older who are joining the army. I've spoken to someone who, you know, joined the military at, you know, 26, 27, I think. And the guy who was the instructor who was taking him through basic training was 24 years old. You know, he's like a real flyer. But this guy was like, you know, oh, I saw myself as, you know, a peer. And I was like, well, that's not what you were. Like, you're asking to join an organization with a distinct set of skills, values, and hierarchy. You know, you mold to that, they don't mold to you. So, you know, you can go to this guy and say, hey, you want to go for a beer after work, he is gonna, you know, give you the high jump, because it's not your place to be there. Whereas in, you know, your average job, you know, you can always, you know, go to your manager and say, do you want to go for a coffee and have a chin wag? And that's not what the military is, especially at the level of, I mean, people see like Full Metal Jacket and things like that and think, oh, you know, that's how the military is. And it's like, well, that's like a very brief snapshot of the 14 weeks from civilian to soldier or, you know, Marine or whatever. People see that and think, oh, that is the military, you know, especially when, you know, we've got Hollywood involved now, you know, and they produce content that they think, you know, oh, yeah, this is accurate because I spoke to someone who was in Vietnam and he said that was it. And he was like, yeah, it was 40 years ago. You know, the military moves on as well. We're just kind of 10 years behind, you know, the civilian sector. So, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest adjustment going out, but it's also the biggest adjustment coming in back into the civilian sector as well, is not having that rigid hierarchy. You know, I was talking to a consultant the other day who said, like, well, you know, I can just ring the managing director of the company, which is probably equivalent to me as like a sergeant in a unit, just ringing the commanding officer and go, hey, Colonel, listen, you know, I've got this, this, you know.
I want to speak to the manager. That's the whole
I mean, there's certain places where that absolutely can happen. And, you know, I've made that phone call. But it doesn't just say, hey, yeah, listen, I'm just letting you know there's more hoops that you have to jump through. If you did something like that, you would be going door to door, just getting berated, you know. So yeah, I think that's the biggest, I think the biggest misconception is that I'm trying to bring that rigid hierarchy into the civilian sector, and that is not what I'm trying to do at all, because there's definitely a time and a place for it. I don't think, unless you're talking, you know, civil service, sort of civil sector contracts, like, you know, the fire department, when there's, you know, a burning building, they have a rigid hierarchy. In like the emergency department, in the ED, the ER, and there's a patient who's arresting, there's a rigid hierarchy within the trauma team. And they almost become a different person. They become a different team in those scenarios. Yeah. Apart from, and then it goes down to like that flatter hierarchy where you can just approach people about problems. And I think that's appropriate in, you know, 99.9% of cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends. So businesses, I mean, the market rewards excellence and efficiency. Typically, generally speaking, there's crony capitalism and there's monopolies and there are perversions, but at a fundamental level, the market rewards excellence and efficiencies. And that's where I think the when you have, like, maybe not, it's not about imposing a strict hierarchy, but about efficient operations, efficient teamwork. I think that's a huge value. Mm-hmm. And I just think a company that's going to be super lax. I mean, I the time of this recording, I know people that work at high levels of some major big tech companies, and there's a bit of a crisis going on now because they've created these semi-utopian workplaces where it's like, let's play ping pong, let's do this. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, we got to get work done. Like, we got to be efficient. We got to be, you can't be procrastinating. You can't be lazy. It is a competitive landscape. Especially if your business is code-based, there's not really a huge barrier of entry. It's not like you've developed some sort of manufacturing, like, assembly line that people can't duplicate easily because they have to build all this robotics. Like, a teenager with a cell phone or a laptop can start coding and compete with you. And there's billions of them in China and there's billions of them in India. And so it's like these tech companies, they've made a bunch of money, but a lot of them, and I'm kind of speaking, you know, just my opinion here, but a lot of them are surviving off code that was written years ago because they've that efficiency isn't there. And I think that's a real value. And I would actually really lean into that in the sense of, like, you want to acknowledge and respect people for who they are in that, but you still want the clear, like, whose butt is in what seat. There's so much that people that get lost, and it just depends, right? And it kind of depends on the culture of the company. But I mean, for me, part of why I wanted to bring you on here is because I wanted, like, this precision, the planning process, the prep, constant preparation, you know, I think that's a huge value add. And so can you speak to that a little bit? Like, when you get into a company, like, are you, what do you look, I guess what's your process? What's your initial I mean, obviously you begin with a diagnostic of some sort because you don't got to do recon. So how does that process work in terms of, you know, like you show up at a company and where do you start? You start at the bottom up? Do you start at the top down? What are you looking for?
Yeah. So it's a great question, and I think part of the sort of hierarchy that we create in these businesses is skills based, not need based. And what I mean by that is that we employ someone to do a job. So I'll give you an example. The managing director of a company that I'm currently contracted to. I was talking to him, and this is kind of a good allegory, I guess, of how I would do a needs assessment. So it's the MD that hires me, you know, 9 times out of 10. And that is purely because, you know, they want to take a step back from what they're doing on the business. They want to expand and have like a larger role. And the current team isn't able to deliver that. Or they don't feel comfortable in the current team being able to deliver that. So I have a conversation with them and I say, well, okay, what's your strategy? What's your vision for the future? What does that look like? And it's important that they talk to me at a strategic level. So a strategic level is, what lever do you want to pull? And the tactical level is, how do you go about approaching and pulling that lever? If they start talking to me immediately about the tactical level stuff, I just nod. I just nod and smile and take notes. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, you're the person that needs to take a step back already because you're dealing with stuff at a tactical level that you're employing other people to do. If they talk to me clearly about strategic level problems, I think, okay, I need to make the next step. I need to make sure is that this strategy is communicated clearly. So, and one of the ways I highlighted this on my last contract was I just got the managing director to draw me a simple flow chart of how the organization works. You know, the same as you see in Apple, Microsoft, things like that. It's managing directors here. He runs these teams run these teams. It's a team of teams. So I said to the MD, okay, you've drawn me this, where do you sit? And he points to the top, right at the top of the hierarchy. I say, okay, where was the last three problems that you solved? And he goes, oh, well, I spoke to this guy this morning, I spoke to this guy, you know, I spoke to this guy. I said, right, okay, that's where you are in the business. I said, that level. I said, otherwise you'd be
dealing
with...
You're not at the top where you think you are, that's where your ego wants to be. The reality is you've only created the systems, processes, and training, and even accountability to where this is the reality of it. Yeah, I love that. Okay.
Yeah. And he, you know, so he had that realization, you know, kind of in that there and then in his office. He was like, oh, and I said, that's not a problem. You know, I said, you are where you are. What we need to do is make sure that these people aren't calling you. I said, so we need to find out the reason why. I said, you might be the problem. I said, are you willing to accept that? And I think because he'd had that realization, if I'd gone into the meeting and said, you might be the problem, are you? He's like, no, I'm paying you. I'm not the problem. But because he's had that realization that
I'm dealing with this level. That's how we end the problem.
Yeah. Well, this isn't what I'm paying you for. But I think because he'd had that realization, it was okay. Is it me? So, and then I just moved down. Because that's what, you know, you've been hired in from, so you just moved down. And then I went and talked to the managers. And the way I approached that, so there's two ways of doing a training needs assessment. You can do an overt training needs assessment where you go in and you have a conversation with people and they're fully aware that you're doing a needs assessment or skill-based analysis of what they're doing. And then there's a covert one where you go in and you have a conversation with someone, but they don't know what the end game is for you. They don't know that you're looking at them. And we generally do this with ego-based people. So If we think there's going to be an ego problem, and I mean, we've used this in countries where it can really hamper, I'm not pointing fingers at any particular cultures, but we use this a lot in sort of Latin and Arabic countries where there's it's lame, it's always, you know, something else, and you kind of have to be a lot more humble in those situations and go, okay, well, you know, let's work through this problem together. But in reality, you're thinking, well, okay, this would be an easy solve if you were willing to accept the solution. But yeah, we just have to kind of find another way of working around that. You know, it's macho societies as well. You know, they don't take criticism well. So I kind of do both. When I'm going into a business, I kind of do a little bit of both. I have a conversation with someone, let them know, hey, you know, this is what I'm looking at. And I don't make them think, that's disingenuous. I allow them to think that the problem is somewhere else. One, because I want them to tell me what they think the problem is. And two, because I'm looking at them thinking, well, what do you think that isn't necessarily reflected in reality? You know, so you're looking for those, assessments all the time, you know, and I'm, you know, more than happy when I'm finished the training cycle, I teach people, this is how you do a training needs analysis. This is how you can look at something. As long as you've got that objectivity, which is why people bring me in from outside, it's why they don't train someone to essentially do my job within the organization. Yeah, man, it's your kid. It's your kid. That's why you send your kid to school and you don't, like, you know, homeschool all the time. Because you want someone to have an objective look and say, you know, your kid can't add up. You love your kid no matter what.
Close to it.
Yeah.
It's a huge, huge problem. So, okay, so you come in, you kind of first, it sounds like you talk at a strategic level, like ask kind of what does success look like? You know, what do you think the problems are? Then you start getting into a tactical level where you start looking at how are goals being achieved, what are the acts, you know, and then you kind of identify, it sounds like, the bottlenecks and prioritize those.
Yeah. So, I mean, I look at how the strategy has been disseminated as well. So if the leader has a vision, so the managing director's got a five-year vision, I say to the leadership team, I'll say, okay, what do you think the vision is for the company in 5 years' time? And what I want is a 80 to 90% alignment on what that is. I want them to have a clear vision and I want it to be essentially the same as the managing director's, because your goal should always be a partial reflection of what you just get a microcosm. You get a snapshot of your part of that 5 year plan, but you should know what 5 years looks like. Yeah.
Okay. So this is all still part of the planning process then.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this is part of the analysis process for me. You know, I don't tend to come up with a plan. I'm quite happy to remain sort of fluid. And generally I can, you know, I've got stuff that I can pull out of the bag, you know, regardless, because generally what I do is book a instructional period in. And within the instructional period, I'm looking at doing the analysis.
Subtle. Well, we talked before. So for people listening to my show, if you've been listening for a long time, you know, you may or may not know that we spent $50,000 last year researching the critical success factors for small and medium-sized businesses. And we found that there were 8: self-efficacy, strategic planning, market intelligence, marketing strategy, sales strategy, and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And when you and I first met, now like a month, 2 months ago, we first started talking about that. And I realized that your real strengths really lie in the strategic planning process and then the business operations, specifically through supporting everybody and understanding their roles. And like you even said, the helping with the training and development and even cross-training. That was really kind of what came through. Like when you told me about the one guy getting like 70 calls a day and you managed, or sorry, like 12 to 20 calls a day, and you managed to reduce that. to by 70%. Like that's significant for someone that's trying to spend their day developing their product or leading the company. When they're spending so much time putting out fires, it's a real issue with operations. And then at the same time, they maybe haven't clearly defined the strategic plan. So it's not necessarily that you know the plan that's going to save the day. It's that you help them articulate it and share it with the team, and that you're there to really help support the backbone of the company and optimize efficiencies and teamwork. And I think that's an incredibly invaluable skill. So now, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you feel like you see happening in the clients that you've been working with? Where, like, anytime you're working with a company or a team, like even in the military, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see happening in teamwork, the biggest breakdowns?
It's a great question. So I think people often get communication wrong. People feel like they have to act differently in a leadership position. You know, I think there's a lot in society that tells us that, you know, being a leader is bad, being, you know, a boss is just inherently a bad thing. I think people want that. People just want that sort of very, bossless, flat hierarchy. I think it's kind of the wrong way of looking at it. I think your favorite GIF, the Michael Scott, is a prime example. You know, that's what people think that a manager is. In the monster, is kind of not needed. And I think, I think my favorite quote was, it was told to me after my first promotion in the military. The guy basically said, hey, you're a Lance Corporal now. He's like, it's the hardest one to get. It's the easiest one to lose because the colonel can take it off you. If you're like a corporal or sergeant, you need to go to a huge board, and be formally charged, but the CO can just take the thing off. I'm just going to move because I'm being blinded at the minute.
This meeting is being recorded.
Yeah, so it's one of my favorite quotes. And the guy said, hey, listen, you're not a leader because you're the smartest person in the room. You're a leader because you're responsible for everything that happens in that room.
I love that.
And that, I think this is a societal thing. I don't think there's an easy fix to this, but I think that people have got responsibility wrong. Responsibility is an absolute privilege. It's one of the highest privileges that you can hold. As a parent, you are responsible about how your kids turn out. That is a privilege. You are lucky to have that awesome responsibility. It doesn't necessarily mean that something is your fault. I think that's the confusion, is that people conflate responsibility with fault. You get into a traffic accident and you lose the use of a leg. It is not your fault, but it is your responsibility to make the most out of your life with what you've got.
Yeah, that reminds me of an acronym I use in managing teams called RACI, R-A-C-I. Who's responsible, who's, at the end of the day, who's accountable to help get it done, who needs to be informed, and who just needs to be consulted, R-A-C-I. And it's like, I got them out of order, but it's that's the idea. Who just needs to be informed, who needs to be consulted about decisions, who's accountable to help get it done, and then who's the responsible person. But I love that because that's the thing. Like we said this before, all a company is a group of people solving the pain of another or the problem of another group of people, and they do it with a product or service, which is why teamwork is such a huge part of it. And a lot of different coaching groups I've run, staff and employee issues is always a big topic. And the military is just notorious for having really efficient systems for, I'm sure there's still upsets too, but just that transition of power and enabling people to level up and have a clear path on how do I get to that next level. All that stuff
we are not perfect. I'm not sitting here going, the military is. the be all and end all of leadership, there's definitely stuff we get wrong. You know, it's you know, there's bullying culture in some places. Yep. You know, it's a stand up or shut up.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just saying that the systems and frameworks and things like that that were super useful for me and that created great work environments, you know, that helped to maximize efficiency in projects. Now, I mean, the UK, the country I live in now, is a prime example. Whenever there's a government policy failure, the military is the first one to be called in to try and fix it. You know, we get called in when the fire service goes on strike. We get called in when, you know, we had the BSE scare about 20 years ago, the mad cow disease.
I remember that.
We were called in to, you know, help the agricultural industry, cull the animals, destroy the animals, transport, all that sort of thing. We were called in for the Ebola crisis in Sierra Leone. You know, I was privileged enough to take part in that Ebola crisis. And that was a World Health Organization level. The only response that the UK and the US government had, I believe, was to just send troops out there because they knew we can go at a moment's notice. We've got systems and planning and processes in place that will enable us to act swiftly.
Yeah. You know,
we get called in for policing now in the UK in the wake of the Ariana Grande and the 7/7 terror attacks. The military is the second line response after the police. So we would go out in support of policing operations. You know, it's not because the military is this awesome, all singing, all dancing, perfect organization that can do everything. It's just, they're just aware that we've got planning systems, frameworks in progress that enable us to act more efficiently. You know, we're just a pool of bodies at the end of the day, but we're a team of teams. And that's, I think, is the key factor in our success.
Yeah, I someone just started grinding metal outside, but I agree 100%. So that was great. Can you repeat, what are some of the habits that you feel that are so critical to how it, you already talked about it just now, you just said it, but this guy's grinding metal and I didn't hear, but you just said that, you know, again, you're not perfect. We've got the systems and that, like, what are some of the commandments, so to speak, like the 10 commandments that you feel that make it so flexible and agile and effective?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it's down to the planning process. To be quite honest, we've got a really awesome planning process. It's called the 7 questions framework. It's not 7 questions; it's between 10 and 13, depending on what you're doing. But they just kind of lump some of them together because 7 is the magic number, you know. 7 habits of highly effective people and all that. Yeah, and also, you know, we've got the we've got hierarchy, we've got our own infrastructure that is integral to us that we look after. You know, so that's in place. But yeah, I mean the planning tools massively. Everyone kind of keeps themselves in shape. You know, forcibly or otherwise. Yeah, I mean, there's a culture of excellence as well. There's I had a boss who I'd go in and tell him, oh yeah, you know, this task is completed, and he'd say, are you happy with it? Are you happy to walk away?
And
really
put
you on the spot, man. Yeah, it wasn't even a trick question. He was genuinely just asking, are you happy to put your name to it? And you'd be like, yeah, and you'd be like, oh, okay. But it'd force you to think, like, am I happy to put my name on it? You know, is this, you know, the best that I can do? But I think equally, you know, there's the we've got the idea of what is important down as well. You know, we're not you know, we don't check boxes. We try not to check boxes pointlessly now. It's a modern organization. You know, I think the British Army was famous in the 1960s for people peeling, you know, they spend all day peeling potatoes as part of their what we call like national service, which was like conscription effectively, post Second World War. You know, my granddad was in his national service, and he said he once spent 3 days, you know, 7 till 7, and he was just painting coal white, because they were like, well, we need, you know, we need something to do. And so they were like, oh, you know, paint. I think it was the Queen was visiting or something. They didn't want her to see, they didn't want to see like black sooty coal. So they said, we'll just paint it white, you know. You know, we've been, it's like, remember being on guard once, and it was, we received an order, and it was sweep up all unwanted puddles. And you're like, great, let's do that in the rain.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, talk about a useless task. That's so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've talked a lot about covering the backgrounds. Now, is there, I mean, is what would you recommend to someone that's struggling? If someone feels like right now they've got a dysfunctional team, or they know that they've got issues in their processes, if they know that they their business is suffering because it doesn't have that lightning kind of speed military precision in the operations, do you have any recommendations for that kind of a person if they're listening to it now? Is there any practical sort of place that they can get started?
Yeah, of course. Just give me a call. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, no, but for real, let's do that. You brought it up. So for real, no, just because you mentioned it, no, it's legitimate. If you have, if can they email you if they have a question?
Yeah, email is Rich Johnson, all one word, at kaizenmindset.net. So it's KAIZEN mindset.net. I can drop links and things like that.
Below. If you've got a question, you can find them on LinkedIn. You can shoot them an email. It's RICHJOHNSON at kaizenmindset.net. So shoot them an email if you got a question. I mean, that's probably the best thing, because it's hard to give blanket advice to people that are just listening to this now. And again, it's
I can definitely do it though. I can definitely give some blanket advice. So my first probably piece of advice would be to get as objective as possible. If you can get someone in to give you a second opinion, because everyone loves their baby. You know, no one sees, you know, you don't know what you don't know as well. So getting another perspective is always a good start. Failing that, just boil it down to the brass tacks, boil it down to as basic, as simple as possible, boil down what you want to do. Set what we call standard operating procedures, or SOPs. It's a pretty common term in business now, but set standard operating procedures. So you are making as few decisions as possible throughout the day, you know, because we've all seen that decision fatigue creep in. Again, one of the things the military is really great at is setting standard operating procedures, so people act a certain way every time something happens. So an SOP is an if-then by statement that saves you time and energy. So a classic example, if I buy apples from the store, or they get delivered to me in the farm box that I order, and I put them in the crisper in the fridge, they will 100% go moldy and I will never eat an apple. If they're on display, I will eat them. So my if-then by statement is, when there's apples in the kitchen, they don't go in the crisper, they go into the fruit bowl, they remain on display, and I will eat them. And that is a scientific fact. Yeah. And they will not go moldy, because I will eat them. And if you need the data to back that up, then find it. It's available for you if it's something that's happening. Another classic example is, if someone outreaches to you, if you get a communication from someone, get back to them within 24 hours, even if it's a, hey, sorry, I don't have an answer yet. It's been 24 hours. Give me another 24 hours to find you an answer. So if a client contacts you, then you book an appointment with them, get it in your calendar, set yourself a reminder, alarm on your phone, something like that. Yeah. To get back to them by a certain time. So there's a XYZ formula that you go through every single time.
I love that. Now, how about keeping SOPs alive? Because that's the big issue that I know a lot of people come through. They create SOPs, but then they just go in a shelf that's never looked at. How do you, does that come around to another SOP, like to have, pull that off the shelf every now and then, to have designated time to go
yeah,
through it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, if there was an SOP that wasn't being used, it's an SOP that's not working. So you probably need to find out why that is. So if your outreach SOP isn't working, why is that? Is it because it's going somewhere that, you know, it's not measured? There's also an element of automation on there. So in the military, we call them immediate action drills or IA drills. So for example, your weapon stops firing. The immediate action drill is to immediately cant the weapon to the left and you look at the cocking handle of the weapon, and that'll tell you if it's fully forward, there's probably something you need to do. If it's back all the way, you can look inside and diagnose problems from there. So immediate action drills in corporations and companies, that's called automation a lot of the time. So you need to find out if your chatbots are working. You need to find out if, so for example, my Calendly is automated. So if someone books a calendar link, it automatically blocks that time off in my calendar. If I put something into my calendar, it automatically blocks that time off in my Calendly. Now, if I change my web address or something like that, I need to go and ensure that that process still works. I need to make sure it blocks time off in my calendar, and vice versa. If my calendar blocks off, then it communicates. So that automation in place is quite important with your immediate action drills. I mean, like, I've got a really, really great PDF document on just creating SOPs and going through a simple formula. So I'm happy to make that available.
Yeah. Okay. So let's give your email again. So if anybody wants that PDF, just send me an email, Rich Johnson, RichJohnson at kaizenmindset.net, KAIZEN mindset.net. And you mentioned you have a Calendly too. If any of the followers wants to get on, do you have like 30 minutes? Would you hop on with someone if they,
absolutely.
You just had a burning question one to ask? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I call it virtual coffee. Just let me know. I'll get a fresh pot of coffee. Yeah. And we could just sit, and I'm happy, more than happy to talk through, you know, what's going on with you, what you think the problem is. And it's obviously just at that personal level. I'm more than happy to, give advice.
Okay. So I know on your website, there's a link, kaizenmindset.net. If they go there, there's a link to book a call, but they can just go directly. If you're web URL savvy, you can go to calendly.com, calendly.com. /rich_Kaizen, KAIZEN. So you can just go to kaizenmindset.net and find his book a call there. But then also you can just go to calendly.com/rich_Kaizen and ask him your direct question yourself if you think you've got a burning question or if you're struggling with this. I want the PDF. Can you send me that PDF after this?
Absolutely.
I think that would be really valuable. I think because that's such an important process. They say anytime you do something more than three times, you should have an SOP. If you do something in your business more than three times and there's no SOP, you could be doing it inefficiently. Or if you're the leader, why are you doing that? That's something that you should delegate. That's the whole concept. If you want to make $1,000 an hour, stop doing $5 an hour work. And how do you do that? Well, so here's the other thing. A lot of people feel they complain about staff, but something a lot of people don't realize is that, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense in any way, but the person has come to you for a job because they need instruction. They're not like, that's a big part of this. Like if people oftentimes, if they had better skills, if they were a superstar and everything, they probably wouldn't be there to serve coffee for you at Starbucks. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you're capable of running a multi-million dollar company, then you're probably not going to sit on the front counter at Starbucks. And it's not, again, it's not saying anything derogatory. It's so business owners understand that you are the leader, you are the vision, you are the workaholic, you love all this. You have these unique skill sets that allows your business to give unique value. You can't expect everyone that shows up on your door to know that as well. But most of them are trainable. But that's where you need an SOP. And that's why I think that's such a good giveaway. So
yeah, And I mean, this is one of the things that I think as well. I think it's a Richard Branson quote, but you know, I absolutely love it. It's train people so that they could leave at any time. You know, so you give them what I always say is give your managers CEO level confidence, and then treat them well enough that they never leave.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's quotes like give the ones you love wings to fly, but enough reasons to stay. Like
yeah,
that kind of
exactly.
I love that.
So you know, I mean, all you're doing is it doesn't take any power away from you when you create lieutenants, when you create or lieutenants, depending on where you are in the world. It doesn't take any power away from you. People, you know, what's the saying? Knowledge is power, and people don't like sharing power. It is like it doesn't take any. It empowers you to empower other people, because you know. I mean, the traditional sort of method of growing a business is to hire in, you know, hire in higher level people, and you know, keep the bottom line and just add, you know, a few workers every now and again. What I would personally look at doing is to keep all the people that started the business with you. Keep them all, hire to retire, and just move them up the chain, because you're giving them the skill set, you're giving them the confidence. If you pay, you know, you might pay someone to come into the business at a director level. You might pay them $80,000 as a one-off. They might stay 5 years, move up the ladder. You're then going to pay someone else $80,000, but between that, you're going to be paying $10,000, you know, just to advertise, recruit, you know, you're taking
the time and all that, and the interviewing. Yeah.
So if you go through, I think the math is, if you go through 10 workers a year, it costs you about $100,000 in gapping the jobs, recruiting. You know, if you're keeping people for the lifetime, not only are you saving money, but you're keeping the spirit and integrity of the business alive as well, as they just kind of move up the ladder, hire to retire, gold watch out. You promote
and
someone
else.
There's
a sacred knowledge issue too. Sorry to cut you off, but there's intrinsic value in the sense of a lot of companies have bottlenecks when there's a sacred knowledge problem where that one person's the bottleneck. But it's also on the flip side where these people, if they've been with you for 10 years, they know things that you aren't even aware of. It's like when people get divorced and they say, like, I feel like I've lost. It's that shared memory that you have with that person. So I think there's power in that as well.
Yeah.
Now, I want to be respectful of your time. I know we're coming up on the end of an hour. Now, I've got so many more things I want to ask you. I might have to have you back for another interview, but is there anything I haven't asked you up to now that I probably should have asked you?
I don't think so. No, I'm happy to come back. I think the main thing that people are missing out on now in a lot of their business is you're building a culture within a business. So it's all well and good saying to someone, well, you know, I've empowered you, you decide how to do it. You, as the director, as the CEO, as the founder, you should be making decisions on how the business acts in a certain way. And that's the superpower that SOPs can give you, is that the business acts the same way with all the customers. So you have it when you call. So I booked some insurance recently for my car. I got a better deal for the same provider, so I went to a platinum package instead of the gold. They didn't cancel the gold package, they billed me for both. So I just called up and said, like, oh, hey, you know, can I cancel this? And the attitude was really, really you know, stuffy. This girl didn't want to be there, I didn't think she really wanted to help. So you know, after about 5 or 10 minutes, I just said, hey, look, you know, can I speak to the manager? The manager called me back after 20 minutes to say, hey, I've just listened to the recording and I am, you know, so sorry for the way that this you've been treated. And I just did a little diagnosis with the manager. I said, well, you know, who trains your staff? I said, oh, you know, it's, she said, the problem with the culture is that, so if you're a salesperson, right? And you get, oh, you know, you're head of the sales team now, but you're still a salesperson. Mm-hmm. Are you going to teach a new starter 100% of your tricks, you know, 100% of how you do what you do, if you think that you're going to be competing in 3 months' time?
You're competing for
the same clients, you know. Yeah. That's the culture that we need to step away from. You need to be making abundantly clear to your salespeople, hey, look, I love that you're training new starters. You're not competing for the same clients. We're expanding, so you're competing with different clients. I want you to teach them how we as a business operate. I want everyone to have that sort of, I call it holistic integrity of the business.
I think it goes back to that culture of excellence you mentioned. I think that's really important. And because when you were talking, what I was thinking about was how, like, at the time of this recording, we've just gone through 2 years of a pandemic. And there's a lot of people like, and I get it. You want to set something and forget it, right? The idea of like automation that makes me money is great. But the reality is the world is not standing still. And you're either growing or stagnating. And so you really want this culture of excellence. And almost like you said, in that scenario with the sales rep, it's like a rent seeking mentality. Like, I just want to find this parasitic position where I'm here latched on and I've got it good and I'm going to just suck it for all it's worth. As opposed to, I want to be the best sales rep possible. I want people that push me to be better so we grow better. And we all do better with like less effort at a momentum. Like, if you talk about a sales team, if you were on a sales team with five killers, you know, like five just amazing, phenomenal people of phenomenal character, phenomenal networkers, phenomenal at understanding people and empathizing with them and really helping connect them with products that they serve and just grind and like, you know, doing every day. Like, that's just, it's infectious. It's like you said, but so anyway, I didn't mean to take the mic, but it's that culture of excellence. I think that that's really what you're getting to, is it's having this culture of excellence, not this culture of rent seeking and comfort. And I just want to be in this place and be comfortable and just do the bare minimum. And I think that that's a really important thing. And it's hard to have staff if they don't feel like they have growth and opportunities and development. If they just feel like I'm just here to push the monkey button, like I'm just watching the clock to get my paycheck and go home, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's the story of an efficiency consultant. He's helping with the pyramids, and he's, you know, he goes up to the first guy, and he's been hired to help them with building the pyramids and improve efficiency. I don't know if you've heard this. I forget where I heard it. It's like Napoleon Hill or something. And he like goes over to the first guy and he's like, what are you doing? The guy's really grumpy. Like, can't you see what I'm doing? I'm smashing rocks. Like, go away, but you know, leave me alone. And he goes up to this other guy. And he's like, oh, what's up with that? And he goes up to this other guy who's doing a little bit better. But the guy's obviously still not, you know, top performer. And he's like, what are you doing here? He's like, well, can't you see? I got a quota to meet. I'm trying to make my quota. Like, leave me alone. And he goes to this third guy, and this third guy is just crushing it. And this guy's doing such amazing work with amazing attention to detail. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, can't you see what I'm doing? I'm building a legacy that will last forever, you know? And it's that same, the vision in what you're doing. And
I love it. Big picture mindset. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It was, reminds me of a, have we got time for one more little anecdote?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll like this one. It's set in Canada. So this British guy, he's a top lumberjack in the whole of England, and he goes out to the World Lumberjack Convention in Canada, obviously in Canada, best lumberjacks in the world, right? And he decides, he's like, gets to the final, and he's, you know, there's this big Canadian guy, he looks like a grizzly bear in a check shirt sort of thing, you know, and he's holding this big axe, and this guy's like, I'm gonna outwork this guy. You know, for every hit, I'm going to hit harder. You know, I'm going to match him like stroke for stroke to fell these trees. So it's 8 hours. You cut as many trees down as you can in 8 hours. So they both set off at the same time, and this the British guy's just matching stroke for stroke, thunk, thunk, and he can hear, you know, off in the distance, he can hear thunk, and he's like, I'm every single one, I'm going to match him. You know, thunk, thunk. 45 minutes into the competition, and he can hear in the distance that the thunking has stopped. So he goes, okay, I'm going to work even harder while he's not working, and then I'm going to match him stroke for stroke. So he's like, okay, so 10 minutes, 15 minutes, he just, hudge, hudge, hudge. You know, he gets two or three trees down, comes back, and, you know, he can hear the thunking again. So he's like, right, stroke for stroke, thunk, thunk. And this goes on, you know, for hours. And every, you know, sort of 45, 50 minutes, the sound on the other side of the woods stops. And he's like, right, I've got, you know, 5 or 10 minutes now to work as hard as I can. Thunk, thunk. He's, you know, knocking these trees down. He's absolutely exhausted. He's covered in sweat. So it gets to the end of the 8 hours. And so they measure how many trees have been cut down. You know, they dock a few points there for leaving boughs, you know, half open, and, you know, trees that have been felled in the wrong direction and stuff. And this Canadian guy is won by a country mile. You know, he's 10, 15 trees ahead of the Brit. And the Brit is, you know, he just doesn't understand. He's devastated. Yeah. And he's in the bar that evening. The Canadian guy comes and sits down. You know, the whole table, like, jumps up where he sat down. And he's just sipping on his kokanee. And the Brit guy goes up and says, can I buy you a beer? Yeah, sure, eh? And he goes, okay, and buys him a beer. And he says, listen, I matched you stroke for stroke, you know, for 90% of the time. So it's stroke for stroke. And then when you took a break, I worked even harder. And the Canadian guy goes, I didn't take a break. He says, what do you mean? I heard you stop. And he was like, I was sharpening my axe.
That's right. That's right.
I tell you, you've probably heard that before, but it's
such a great story. I'm Lincoln. If I had 7 hours to cut down a tree, I'd spend six of them sharpening my axe. But that's a good one. That's a good one. If hard work was enough, more people would be millionaires. If hard work on its own was enough, it's like your kids. If love was enough, everyone's kids would be healthy, happy, successful. It's not.
Yeah.
There really are secrets. There really are secrets. There really are tricks to it. There really are these things that come, like the Inuit, they used to call them Eskimos, but it's not politically correct. The Inuit up north, they have 5 words for snow because they have such an intimate knowledge of it and the textures of it and the seasonality of it. Like that's like a tactile knowledge. That's just not something that you can read a book and watch a YouTube video and get. So no, I love that. I love that so much. For people listening to this, if you're interested in having that sort of tactile knowledge and help with your teams, with your operations, with bringing the benefits of military planning and organization to your company so you can have a culture of excellence, so you can operate with lightning speed, so you can have people supporting each other better in your company, go check out kaizenmindset.net, K-A-I-Z-E-N mindset.net. Give Rich an email if you got a question, richjohnson at kaizenmindset.net. Or if you're not going to waste his time, if you got legitimate questions and you're serious about possibly wanting to do something and work with him, go book a time on his calendar. You can check out the website, kaizenmindset.net, or go to calendly.com/rich_kaizen. And obviously, he's spending some time here. He's a great guy. I mean, I've loved every moment that I've spent with him. He's just a great, I mean, I just don't want to blow hot air up your butt, but I brought him on the show here for no reason other than he's just been an amazing friend to me and very supportive. And you can just really tell he knows his stuff. And as a guy that helps companies do millions in that, I know how important operations and teamwork and collaboration and planning is. And so I knew that you had some goods and I definitely want to bring you back to ask you more. Thank you again so much, Rich, for everything. And I can't wait to bring you back on the show again soon.
Thanks for having me, Daryl. It's been really, really great. And again, you know, I think we've built a real friendship up over the last, definitely last few months of working together. I'll probably go get a haircut or something, shave my beard maybe, I don't know. Start looking alive. Yeah.
All right, man.
Yeah, it's been awesome, man. Take care.
Take care.